already know, don't we? Of course we know. Welcome back to the Crossbreed Holster Studios. This piece, I want to send you to the piece, investors.com, and take a look at it. John Lott, Obama has impacted the courts, Scalia replacement or no. And it's very, very important that you understand what happens when the president gets his. When he mentioned the nuclear option, what that did was that eliminated judicial filibusters, letting the nominees sail through the nominating process in the Senate with only a majority 51 votes, which just fast-tracked all the liberal appointees that Obama wanted. And here, quoting from John, even if Obama doesn't get another appointment to the Supreme Court, he has already shaped the federal judiciary more than any president in decades. With almost a year to go, he has already had virtually as many confirmed nominees of his party as did his predecessor, George W. Bush, 319 to 321. And as you heard John write there in that piece, and as I said before the break, he's got just under a year to go. With two Supreme Court justices, Obama has made as many appointments as any president since Ronald Reagan. His four appointments to the District of Columbia Circuit Court, considered to be the second most important federal court in the country, are more than any president since Harry Truman. And as you can imagine, the way John closes it out is essentially, I won't give it to you essentially, I'll tell it to you. George W. Bush's unsuccessful brightest nominees could only wish they were treated as unfairly as Obama's. Because Obama was able to get his way like few presidents have, think about that, he will have an outsized influence on the federal judiciary for decades to come. John, welcome back to the program. That scares a lot of us who understand the process and what it means. It's my understanding, and I think I've reported on the program before, maybe you can correct me or tell me that it's changed, but I had reported previously that Obama had already flipped the ideology on 9 of 13 circuit courts. Do you know if that's true or not? Has it increased?
The Democrat appointees hold the majority on those circuits. Maybe more than 9. I think I don't know the exact number. It may be 10 or so. But no, the vast majority of circuit courts have Democratic majorities. So if you the likelihood that you're going to get Democrat-dominated panels, and each panel is three judges, is right. Pretty high. And if they ever have what's called an en banc decision, which is they go and they ask all the judges on a circuit to review a decision, then in that case, if it's an issue like guns, where the political appointment who appointed the judge pretty much explains almost perfectly how they're going to rule on the case, then you're pretty sure you're going to lose in all those circuits.
Yeah, we talk with Alan Gottlieb about that quite a bit. You know, the Ninth Circuit out in California, out on the West Coast, the most overturned circuit, by the way, of the Supreme Court, widely regarded as the most liberal. They have issued a couple of three-judge panel rulings that have been favorable out in California, but as John just mentioned, when you look at en banc and you look at the entire panel then going in to review it, the chance of it being reversed is very, very high. That's why this is so vital, and it's why we pay so much attention to this. It's not just the Supreme Court. Of course, the attention is now being focused on Antonin Scalia's passing and what this means. So the only thing I can say is I'm hopeful, but I do not give them the benefit of the doubt anymore because we've been burned too many times in the past. I'm talking about Mitch McConnell and the rest of the establishment heads up there who have let us down so frequently, but I am hopeful that he will keep his word and will not let the process move forward during an election year, but we'll see how that works out. Okay, John, you have another fascinating study, and I have to tell you, I'm not all the way through this yet, but you revised this Economists and Criminologists' Views on Guns, Crime, Suicides, and Right to Carry Concealed Handgun Laws. This is fascinating. Can you tell us a little bit about this thing with the remaining 3 to 4 minutes we have?
Sure. Well, I mean, people can go to our website at crimeresearch.org, and if you just search under economists, criminologists, you'll find it, I'm sure. But we have surveyed all the economists and all the criminologists who have written on gun issues, empirical studies, so they're looking at data over a period of 15 years. So there's, got everybody who's written during that period of time in a peer-reviewed academic journal to ask them what their views are on it. And what you find is that economists are more sympathetic towards gun ownership than criminologists are, but both believe that net gun ownership reduces crime, makes people safer, and that permit holders are very law-abiding. There are some important differences, though, but generally, if you look at both groups combined, they're very strongly in favor of gun ownership, though, as I say, economists, maybe not too surprisingly, are more sympathetic than criminologists. The big difference between economists and criminologists is that economists believe in the notion of deterrence. If you make something more costly, people do less of it. You know, price of apples go up, people buy fewer apples. If the cost of committing crime goes up, whether it's higher arrest rates or whether it's the fact that victims might be able to go and defend themselves, economists believe it makes a difference. Criminologists don't seem to think that that deters criminals very much. And, you know, you see that in their result, in their answers to the survey questions. They're much more divided on these issues.
John, isn't it common sense? I remember taking economics in college. I enjoyed economics in college, believe it or not, when I was going through business. I majored in business management. And isn't it just common sense that if you raise the price of apples, that, I mean, it seems to me common sense, we'll use that example, you raise the price of apples, you're going to buy fewer apples, and maybe you're going to start buying bananas. And then after time, the law of diminishing returns kicks in and everything else that goes with it. But didn't we find that to be the case years back? And forgive me for not having the name of the study. I believe it was back in the 80s, and it was, gosh, I can't remember the name of the study, so I'll just move on and tell you.
All economists basically believe that. I mean, it's not just a study in the 80s, but as far back as economists have done research on these topics, they believe that principle holds. They call it the law of demand. Prices go up, people buy less of it, and there's a reason why they call it the law of demand,
right,
rather than just a suggested principle. They think it holds all the time. But that's what
John, I hate to do this. I have to stop you because we're getting ready to end the hour. I'm so sorry to have to interrupt you, to cut you off right there, but we look forward to having you back on. We'll bring you back on the daytime show as well. This hour of Armed American Radio is up. AWR Hawkins is coming up next. You can head over to crimeresearch.org and read everything John was just talking about. I'm Mark Walters. I've been filling your prescription for freedom. Remember, carry on, carry off, and carry absolutely everywhere. Never leave that cave without your club. We'll be right back.
You've just filled your prescription for freedom on Armed American Radio with Mark Walters, the loudest voice in America fighting for gun rights. If you'd like to contact the show or get more information, it would be great to hear from you. Just go online and visit armedamericanradio.com. That's armedamericanradio.com.
Hi, everybody. Mark Walters here. Folks, whether you carry a gun already or are even considering it, and this is very serious business, one of the most important steps that you can take is to join the nation's number one resource for the armed citizen, the United States Concealed Carry Association, the USCCA. They sponsor the show. You know who they are. Folks, now is the time to learn how to protect yourself, your family, your property, and your business with a concealed weapon, because you never know when you may need to. The USCCA is designed specifically for those of us who have chosen to take our personal defense very seriously. I've put together special membership offers for the Armed American Radio listeners, you, at jointheuscca.com. That's jointheuscca.com. Now is the time to join the USCCA and take advantage of the incredible resources available only at the USCCA. That's jointheuscca.com. These are troubling times in America, folks. Become a member today.
I don't think I need to tell you this, but I'm going to anyway. When it comes to concealed carry, a smart shooter is a prepared shooter. And going to the range and shooting at a target just isn't enough. While training is important, you need something more. And that's why 135,000 responsibly armed Americans rely on Concealed Carry magazine. To pick up where training at the range leaves off, expect life-saving information on every page, every issue. Whether it's unbiased gun and gear reviews or real stories of self-defense, from real people who carry concealed every day. You'll stay up to date on the latest training drills and laws regarding your right to carry your firearm. And for a limited time, when you start your subscription, you'll automatically be entered to win one of four brand new guns. But this won't last long. So go to the number one of the number four guns.com right now to begin your subscription and claim your chance to win your dream gun. That's one of four guns.com.